Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Okay, guys, we are here with pop culture enthusiast and writer Evan Ross Katz. Hello, Evan.
Hi, it's such an honor.
So Evan is a huge fan of Bravo, Housewives, Roni, all the things. So we wanted to bring him on to have a little special segment for you guys today where we go through some of those friend ofs. You're going to remember these people. We're going to look back at some of their best moments.
They're important figures.
They're important figures, and talk about, could they have been more?
Yeah, we can get into that.
And we also have Sarah, our producer.
Oh, hello.
As a super fan of Bravo, we thought it was only right that we include her in this conversation as well.
Honored and blessed to be here, truly.
So, Evan, tell people where they can find you, a little bit about what you do, just some background for our listeners.
Yeah, I write about pop culture for a number of websites, Garage Magazine, Paper Magazine, Oprah, MTV, etc. So my work is sort of ever-present on the internet. But I would say I am most active on social media, on Instagram and Twitter, where I share a lot of my opinions that then sort of find their way into articles.
Whether you write those articles or not.
That's true. That is very true.
Okay, so we have a list here of people we want to go through. First off, I want to talk Kim G. Not Kim D. Kim G. So she was seasons 2 and 3 of Real Housewives of New Jersey, and she was quite a bit.
Yeah.
Right? She was maybe not even two-faced, but three-faced?
But she didn't start off that way.
Interesting, yes.
So I've actually been rewatching, well, I'm rewatching several at a time. I kind of bounce around depending on my mood, but I have been revisiting season 2 recently. And what's interesting is, you know, she very much comes in at the beginning as Danielle's friend. However, she's also hanging out with Jacqueline quite a bit, talking about Danielle behind her back. And then also, which I forgot about, there's the connection of her son and Caroline's son being best friends.
Right.
And Caroline famously saying that she didn't want to develop a friendship with her because I think Caroline realized where this was going. And so in the beginning, Kim kind of was rather even keeled despite the fact that she talked about people behind their back. Mm-hmm. But then they're like the moments, like the posh fashion show when everything goes left, when it's like Kim really, like for instance, Kim encourages Teresa to call the police on Lauren.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. And I felt like that was one of those moments when it's like, that moment got really real, but also I was like, wow, you really like instigated this person calling the police on a teenager over a situation that very much could have been dealt with without police being involved. So that's an example of like Kim being a little too dirty for my liking.
That might have been the first sign for all of us that like, ooh, yeah, something is up here.
Yeah. She came to play.
Yeah.
She came to play. I mean, even most recently, I was doing some research on what she's been up to since then, and because of her hatred, I guess, of Danielle, she recently paid Danielle's ex, Joe Masalta's legal fees when he was suing Danielle a few years ago. So, like, that's, like, well beyond what we saw on the show.
Yeah.
This is extending into, like, years and years later.
To go even further, she, even though she's not on the show, she still watches all of Real Housewives of New Jersey and live tweets about it. And a lot of her tweets have to do with Miss Danielle. And Danielle, when she was on Watch What Happens Live, a fan called in and was just like, hey, do you see that Kim G's like still talking about you? And Danielle basically was just like, she needs to go into the nursing home already.
Ooh. When I think of past figures on the show who sort of like kind of like come out of the woodwork at times, she's one of the first that comes to mind in terms of really not being able to like let go of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. That's the thing. Like I feel like if I was her, I'd have a hard time letting go of that moment as well.
Right.
But what's tricky is it never felt like she had this like really great friendship with Danielle, yeah, like foundationally. So I think the reason why, because for me, like my entry point into all of this is the Jill Bethany, you know, fight of 2010. Mm. And I think it's like the reason why that impacted viewers the way it did was because of how real that friendship had been for 2 seasons before, Whereas with like a Kim and Danielle, it was like they had so little in common. Yeah. Their kids were completely different ages. They like just came from different worlds that to watch it dissolve, it's ultimately like hard to really root for either of them because they're both really messy.
Speaking of messy, can we revisit their big fight?
I'm glad you mentioned that because I just have one question about that. What does it mean to have square tits? I mean, I'm sure I should probably say it like them. Square tits.
Square tits. Yeah. Well, in that case, I mean, it's obviously a play on the implants, but I still think Danielle's tits are round.
They're very round.
Yeah, right? They're super round.
They are.
You're fake and square tits. I mean, what an iconic performance.
Yeah, it was definitely a performance.
Right? One other thing that she's been up to since leaving the show was a brief stint of dating Michael Lohan.
The Michael Lohan.
Wow. How do they find each other?
That did not last very long. Okay, let's jump over to Jen Gilbert, Real Housewives of New York City. Let's go.
Well, so I think what's interesting to back up about Jen is she, to my knowledge, is the very first friend of. Mm-hmm. And I was talking with my boyfriend the other day, and he was like, well, what is a friend of? And so I'll tell you how I define it, but I'm really curious how the both of you define it.
Interesting.
So to me, a friend of is someone who does not have their own plot. The cameras do not follow them on their own, but they do help to further pre-existing plots, and they can be given their own confessionals, as we've seen with Marlo and others. So to me, the idea of the friend of is that you did not have plot of your own, but you contribute to plot.
I think that's pretty accurate.
That's exactly what I would say.
Right. And I think there's some exceptions along the way, thinking about housewives who were once housewives and then became friend of.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You know, we saw that with Danielle Staub this past season. I mean, she had a lot of story last season. So, I mean, she's an example. But again, she started off as, you know.
Yeah, and Camille this past season. That's right. A great example.
Oh, yes, she was.
And Vicky.
So Jen Gilbert, she came in through Jill Zarin.
Yes.
She wrote a book.
Which was crazy.
Which detailed some crazy things about being attacked by a guy when she was in her early 20s. She was stabbed like 37 times or something crazy with a screwdriver. So that's like its own situation, right?
Yeah. Haven't read it.
Read the cliff notes.
Right, crazy. Exactly. But then she primarily was showing up, what was it, season 3?
Season 3 was her big season.
Yeah.
I think the thing with Jen is that she came in at a time when Jill was not the most favorable in terms of from the viewer perspective. And so naturally you sort of had a friend of who came in who was aligned with someone that in that moment was, you know, causing a lot of drama.
Right.
So she kind of came in with that disadvantage. But then I think also, and this is a problem that I think Barbara faced, the successful friend ofs need the other women to want to interact with them. And I think what Jen faced, and similarly Barbara, was a lack of willingness from the housewives to engage with her. Mm-hmm. So I like remember this one fight, I think sometime in season 3, and Jen was sort of hovering over Jill at one point. It might have been the Alex, I'm at Brooklyn, blah, blah, blah fight. Mm-hmm. But I remember sort of that idea of like, it's sort of like, well, what is this woman doing here?
Yeah. Now, do you think that she also came in on the same season as Sonia, which, you know, coming in maybe as like a new face and being up against a character, we will say, like right. Sonia, maybe Jen didn't even really stand a chance.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I think something similar happened with Cindy in season 4, mm-hmm. which is just the idea that the New York women are a unique breed.
Yes.
You know, different than any other city in sort of their eccentricities. But I think when super normal people come on the show, they tend to have a hard time. And that's why someone like a Dorinda or a Tinsley fits into the ethos of the show so well, because they can sort of match the energy. And I think in the case of a Jen, it just was sort of like, you need to go harder.
Right. Yeah, totally. She couldn't necessarily hang.
Yeah,
she was too normal.
Yeah,
too normal.
Too normal.
It's like what Bethany says. It's such a good scene from this past season when she's sort of giving Barbara that pep talk and she's like, you need to get in the game,
right.
Which I love because to like, you know, someone that doesn't watch the show regularly, would be like, well, what do you mean? It's reality TV. It's not a game. And it's like, well, yes, it's absolutely reality. But like, there's an element where like, you gotta come to play.
Yeah.
And one thing about the current women on the show is like, they all come to play. And that's right. What we love about them.
Yeah. They know how to do it. Yeah, I think Jen maybe was a little too normal. And I think there's a fine line, too, because a lot of times in these franchises, there is one person who's a little bit the voice of reason. Like, there's one person that almost the audience can kind of see their eyes through, and maybe that's how they were setting Jen up to be. But then, like, to your point, she just kind of didn't deliver in the bigger picture.
Right. Yeah. And there's a world in which, you know, to that end about that role, that she could have really taken that on in the confessionals and sort of been a narrator. But again, I just don't think she was equipped for that side of the coin either.
Did you read her book by chance? It's called I Never Promised You a Goodie Bag. It was published in 2012.
Wow. And HarperCollins.
Yeah.
That's what's big.
That's legit.
I have not read her book.
Maybe that can be our homework. We'll all read her book.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be good to give it some sales, I imagine.
Have a book club.
Right. I did write down in my notes because I went back to watch the episode where Ramona renewed her vows. And to your point about like the sides that she was on, there was actually a divide from the aisle where everyone was sort of sitting. Mm. And, you know, she was on one side with kind of Jill, Kelly, and then everyone else was a bit on the other side. But she did witness the birth of Money Can't Buy You Class.
Iconic.
Yeah.
Which, like, when you think about it, that's huge. Yeah. And Luann, to see where Luann has taken that, she was present for it, and she actually, in an interview, called it early Madonna. Nonetheless, she was there as a witness to the birth of something that has really shaped Luann's career at this point. Okay, let's jump over across the country to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Dana Wilkie. Dana, to me, was the quintessential gossip girl meets like late 2000s LA party girl.
That is the best way to describe her.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I was revisiting when she comes back, I think later on, and meets up with Taylor, and she's got the cigarette, and she's giving me like Tara Reid, like husky, like her Lamborghini was taken away. It's magnificent.
Yeah.
I miss her.
Dana was really fun. Dana had a hard time finding her footing within the group. And I think, interestingly, if I recall correctly, her and Brandy both came on at the same time. And Brandy very quickly found her voice within the group. Mm-hmm. And so I think Dana had the misfortune of not having, you know, the seniority in the situation.
Right.
And I think Dana was just sort of unable to make things work. I mean, I will always remember the chair situation at game night. Mm. And what's interesting about Dana is that so I'm going to compare her to like a Karen Huger, because you have like Karen Huger, who like really wants to present this version of her life and really wants you to, you know, come and experience her affluence. But with Dana, it's like, if I had my house in that state, I just wouldn't invite you in.
Right.
No.
And Dana was very much like wanting to host this game night, wanting viewers to see the house as it was. So I thought that was a really interesting aspect of Dana, which was like, she made no sort of like air to make her life seem a certain way, minus the $25,000.
Right, right, of course.
But I just will always remember that barren home.
Right. Well, she talks about it when she shows up to the reunion about her sort of complex upbringing, how she started off as a masshole. I'm from Massachusetts, fellow masshole, so I have love and respect. And I guess her mother didn't have a lot of money, but then she ended up kind of at the other end of the spectrum, which I think, you know, she moved to New York, I guess, and moved in with her dad and all of that sort of stuff. So she definitely has those like equal parts, like,
she's like Hannah Montana.
Trashy and classy, you know?
Hannah Montana. She's got the best of both worlds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think she presented a very interesting dynamic, I think, in a lot of ways. And especially when you look at how Beverly Hills is now and all of the women are pretty glossy and they're almost putting up this, like, very sheen Beverly Hills image. But at this time, you had, you know, Kim Richards, you had Taylor Armstrong, you had Dana, and they were all a little bit messier.
Yeah.
In a different way than just like being dramatic.
I think it's worth noting that she came in with a disadvantage, as I feel any housewife or friend of does, when they don't bring in the man, but they're talking about the man.
Mm. Yes.
Because I think similarly to how I feel about Gina right now on OC is we always want to be in your corner as the viewer, but when we're only getting one side of the story told to us, but in the case of someone like Dana, it's like she came in and then she's talking a lot about this husband and how she loves him and everything, but everything seems like a house of cards. And then when you don't have him there to at least sort of like thread the needle a little bit,
yeah,
you're left kind of like, okay, so you talk a lot of game, but where's the man? Where's the furniture? I think it's harder, whereas right now on OC with Bronwyn, it's like we've gotten the whole family right off the bat, mm-hmm, and we see, sorry to like jump around.
No, you're fine.
No, I love that.
But to see how organized of a household Bronwyn runs,
right,
it's immediately endears you to her and sort of rounds out who she is, because within 5 minutes of meeting her, I was so impressed with her ability and agility in handling that household in the mm-hmm morning and really being like present, that I was like, okay, I'm in with you, even through what you've displayed, not through what you've told me. And I feel like Dana is the complete opposite.
Right. It's like trying to control your own narrative versus, yeah, like letting your story be told by just having the cameras show up to your life.
Hello.
Exactly how it is.
And that's been a huge topic of conversation, especially come reunion time, like most recently with Southern Charm, but even going back to Vanderpump Rules past reunion special, where, you know, Lala didn't really show anything about Randall, and like going even deeper, she deleted all her photos of her and Randall together. So it's something that the viewers like to see. We like to see the full picture, yeah, you know, not even just like a little glimpse of it.
Right. I think that, you know, there's many reasons why Bethany is my favorite housewife of all time, but particularly I think just the access that she has given us to her life, you know, by taking us in the car when she's on her way to those court appearances.
Yes.
And really understanding that in order to fully go there and be available and be a public figure, she, I think, realized that it's actually beneficial. I actually want to draw a parallel. This is happening right now in real time, but Miley Cyrus is on a Twitter thread as we speak, mm-hmm, right now,
right,
sort of like being like, I'm going to fold all my cards because I'm going to take away your ability to control the narrative. Mm-hmm. And I think Bethany, as an example, has been so great about that, which is that I am 100%. I mean, I would be 100% Team Bethany no matter what, but I am 110% Team Bethany because I feel like she's someone who always, she never hid anything, and so there was never anything to sort of like sneak and attack her with. And yeah, I think that's one of her real powers among, yeah, many.
And that's a good lesson, I think, for a lot of people across franchises, but especially Beverly Hills. You know, you can't have skeletons in your closet.
Mm-mm.
They're going to come out.
Right. Or you can have them, but like own it, right?
Yeah.
Which is right, another no, huge theme.
Own it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of the show. I think that, just because I want to, just real quick with Potomac, but I think one of the most, because Potomac is one of my like,
oh,
absolute,
yes,
favorites. But I think one of the interesting plot points of Potomac, which has been a through line from the show from the beginning, is this idea of like all of these women sort of like withholding aspects of their identity,
yes,
or sort of, again, trying to frame the narrative and sort of like other women trying to out them,
mm-hmm,
which I think is super interesting, which makes for really good television as well. So it's interesting in my argument to sort of be like, well, I think you should, you know, fold your deck. It's like, actually, there's something to be said about the women that don't fold their deck at all. So, which right, just goes to show you the variety of ways in which you can be a great housewife.
It's true. True. Housewife, friend of, there's so many opportunities.
So many. Bring them back.
Let's stay in Beverly Hills, because next I want to talk about Faye Resnick.
Oh, Faye.
So, the morally corrupt Faye Resnick.
Yeah.
Obviously, with the whole connection to the Simpson trial, yes, the book, the Playboy, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So where do you stand on Faye Resnick?
Well, it's interesting, as you mentioned, because the viewer comes in having known this name before.
Yeah.
And, you know, having her be a part of a really important moment in history. I do think it's worth noting she really had one of the most organic friendships.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Kyle, right, their friendship predated this show by a long shot. And so I think that what's interesting about Faye is, like, she was going to be there regardless of if the cameras were up or not. And and this is to Kyle's credit, but like something about Kyle is like her loyalty is so wonderful. I like when Faye is present because I feel like she's super real. She's one of those women that doesn't know how to be anything besides real.
Yeah.
And I think in a city like Beverly Hills, particularly where there's so much sheen presented, I think Faye and her general kind of iciness was really important. Like, yeah.
But I feel like that goes back into your point that she was legit a friend of Kyle's.
Yeah,
like, right. She was really a friend. So she had that, like, extra backing of being a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, feeling free to say what she wants to say because her friend's going to be there. And her friend, most likely, is going to back up what she is saying.
Totally. Yeah. And so off of that, it's interesting. Because, like, when she was going toe-to-toe with Camille, it was because she genuinely was defending her friend.
Yeah.
Who she felt was being attacked. So I think that dynamic made Faye infinitely really interesting.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of the moment with Catherine Edwards where she kind of confronts Faye about what she wrote in the book, where Faye basically said that it was Catherine's fiance at the time had an affair with Nicole Brown Simpson. And Catherine is kind of prodding her and trying to get her to sort of answer to it and say something about it. And Faye doesn't really open her mouth. She just kind of lets her go through it and just lets her speak her mind. And it's just quiet about it. She's like, I don't know what you want me to say. This is so far long ago that I don't know what you expect from me. And it feels like a very genuine, authentic, real reaction because if you were, you know, vying for your full-time position as a housewife, you might take that and run with it and start a fight and really engage in that conversation. But Faye was not about it. And she still is around, too.
Yeah.
We saw her this last season, very briefly.
She's still hanging out with the Kardashians. Like, she was just on vacation with the Kardashians.
Yeah.
And, like, they're still family friends. They're still kicking it.
And I think there's something, I don't want to say endearing, but there's something nice about someone who's not vying for screen time.
Yeah.
So it's very clear, whether it be her friendship with Kris Jenner or with Kyle Richards, that Faye's agenda is not such that she wants to or needs this show. Also, Faye has her interior decorating. Team Faye.
Speaking of the Kardashians, this is a bit of a side note, but have you ever seen that video that Kris, at the time Kardashian, created for her 30th birthday?
Sure.
I Love My Friends or whatever.
Sure.
I watched it only once because I couldn't revisit. And I thought, I expected Faye to show up in the video. I don't think she's in it, but OJ and Nicole are a part of it. And it's just like, it is one of those things, you know, just speaking of that moment in time, how huge it was in our lives and history and everything, like watching that sort of video, it does feel like this very strange time capsule thing. Okay, so we are going to stay in Beverly Hills because next I want to talk about Marissa Zanuck.
My mother.
I mean, essentially Hollywood royalty in many ways.
Yes.
So what is it that you love so much about her?
Well, I am a Marissa apologist. I love Marissa. I just think that the timing didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, famously, I believe it was her father that passed away right before the trip that they went on. So she wasn't able to go on the trip where I think she would have really broken out. I just liked Marissa. I thought that, this is what I'll say about Marissa. I think Marissa had a lot to bring. And just, I remember, like, you know, just her life. You know, she very much was the daughter of Hollywood royalty, as you mentioned. And I thought that Marissa had a just like a way, it didn't feel like she was hungry for the camera.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like she was happy to have the camera there.
Yeah.
And I was really into her husband. Not just like, I mean, like, I was aesthetically into him, but I also just thought he fit into the show naturally. He seemed like a good second husband for Mauricio, because the thing is, I feel like Ken and Mauricio has never really gelled for me, and then Edwin and Mauricio doesn't quite land for me. I felt the brotherhood with Marissa's husband, whose name is slipping my mind.
Dean. Yes. Which is funny that you say that, because she caught a lot of shit too, because she referred to him once as not my type.
Yeah.
Well, and all the women were like, what do you mean by that?
But I love that. Like, I would have loved to get into that.
Right.
I thought just Marissa had a lot to offer. And I think generally, I don't know, when I went back and watched season 3 not that long ago, because I've got a lot of time. And I just remember thinking, this is what I can say. I remember thinking I wanted more from her. And that's not a feeling I get from many of the friend-ofs. I usually think that they kind of cycle, you know, they're there in the time for the time they should be. With Marissa, there was very much a feeling of what if, especially come season four, when Joyce and Carlton, who neither of whom gelled for me and neither of whom gelled with the group, mm-hmm. I feel like Marissa really deserved that diamond.
Well, you can get a little bit more Marissa if you watch Million Dollar Listing. Mm-hmm. She made some appearances on that. But speaking of her husband, Dean, she did actually file for divorce from him a few years back in 2013. It was in 2016 after 13 years of marriage.
Aww.
So she filed for divorce. That was the last coverage that I saw on it. I don't know if they changed their minds or what. But Marissa, if you're listening, give us an update.
You're just like, his,
you guys could see him, his jaw was literally dropped and he was really horrified.
Well, bring her back. Shannon has a man now. Gina's single. This is OC. I know I'm crossing over, but is anyone single in Beverly Hills now? I want a spinoff, Brandy and Marissa.
Ooh.
On the town.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Legendary.
Maybe Dana can come in. Just throwing out ideas.
One thing about Marissa too is after she left Beverly Hills, I guess that Kyle unfollowed her on Twitter. So do you have any theories as to why that might have happened?
I mean, like, here's the thing with social media. It is such a tricky business because, you know, I'm sure you guys both follow people that you're like, I really don't want to follow, but I kind of have to follow just out of niceties. But I feel like, at least Kyle's side, she said that she didn't really mean to unfollow her and it just happened. But, like, how does that just happen?
Yeah.
And Marissa was not too happy about it. And she sent out a tweet herself stating that life is too short to concern myself with housewife unfollowing me, whom I thought was my friend. Hashtag too petty.
Ooh.
So, team Kyle on that one.
Yeah.
Because, and obviously, like I said, I'm a Marissa apologist. However, I feel like with real friends, you take that offline.
Right.
So, while, yes, I would, you know, text a friend. If I had a close friend that unfollowed me on social media, I don't think it's like crazy to text them and be like, what's up? I don't think it needed to be done publicly. I just don't think that makes anyone look good.
Well, there's like a whole thing now, not to go back to Vanderpump Rules, but to go back to Vanderpump Rules, that like everyone's unfollowing Jax, or Jax is unfollowing everyone. What is it?
I think it's mutual.
Mutual. Everyone's unfollowing each other. So like in the Bravo world, like this isn't something that is too unusual, right, you know? Right.
Well, yeah. Even in just pop culture in general, you see it all the time. If, like, Rihanna starts following Lady Gaga, there's all sorts of theories, like, oh my god, they're collaborating. Like, people really monitor that stuff, and especially in the reality TV space, it's always a lot of fodder in between seasons to be like, what's going on? What's happening? Like, why? What is the conflict?
Yeah.
The whole Kylie Jordan Woods stuff came out, they were, like, constantly refreshing their following pages to see if they were, like, unfollowing them.
Yeah.
I was like, who's gonna unfollow her first? It was Khloé.
Fun deep dive to do for anyone that's bored is Bethany's follow list is just
interesting.
Yeah, she just follows all the right people.
That's
I'm
a
like
fun
really
game.
Curious now.
We'll have a bonus episode for
that. We should.
Okay, last but not least, at least on my list, is Dwight Eubanks,
the character of all characters,
Real Housewives of Atlanta seasons what, 1 and 2, right? Or
I think we got him later on.
Did we get him later on too?
Yeah, because he was involved with Phaedra.
Right. So he came in. Okay. So he came in through Nene.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up closer with Phaedra.
Yeah. And then that's when his relationship with Nene kind of went awry.
Right. She chased him out of that party. Mm-hmm. It was not good. But there was something about money, right?
Well, there's also, he was either friends or enemies with Sheree, because there was the fashion show with no fashions comment.
Right, of course. How do you have a fashion show with no fashion?
Which is a legitimately good fashion.
That's a really good question.
It holds up.
But yeah, I think there was some kind of issue with money. Nene chased him out of that party. And then Phaedra, and then where did he go? What happened to Dwight?
He was on Botched.
Well,
that's what happened to him. He had a botched nose, and he asked Mr. DeBro to fix his nose for him. Turns out he could fix it. It was salvageable. And then at the end of the episode, they always do like this huge reveal at the end of the episode. He threw a funeral for his old nose.
Good.
Good.
I do remember him throwing Phaedra's party for one of the kids' birthdays or something. Oh, yeah. I love Dwight. I think Dwight is fundamental. I think Dwight is a kind of character that you don't really see reflected a lot on scripted television or reality television. Mm-hmm. And I thought there's Dwight's brand of over-the-topness is so Southern and so genteel and so smart, because despite the fact that he has this flair for the dramatic, he does it in such a calculated and quiet and succinct way, mm-hmm. that it doesn't, though he gets the screen time, it doesn't feel like he's vying for it.
Yeah.
It feels like more like he made a plan going into the day.
I agree. Yes, that's a great way to put it.
And I just, he's someone that I think, you know, the door is always open, I'd like to believe, in terms of it would be great to have him back. And, you know, he's been on Watch What Happens Live quite a few times, mm-hmm. Talking about his erectile implant.
Oh, wow.
And
the more you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fun. I think when we look back, we talk about, you know, Miss Lawrence a lot. But I think Dwight in the beginning, too, sort of goes a little bit unsung in terms of his contributions to the show.
I thought I read somewhere, too, that he's currently married to a woman. Do you have any information on that? Do either of you?
Honestly, when you said that to me today, I was shooketh.
I did a quick Google search last night just to see, like, what's he up to, you know, whatever. Yeah. And there was something about how he said he was engaged and then later on married a woman, which...
I mean, good for
congratulations,
you.
Congratulations, yes. Dwight, on your marriage.
Yeah.
You know?
I'd love a spinoff.
Okay, before we wrap up, I want you to give us 5 more friends of,
mm-hmm.
and a one-liner about why you love them.
Okay, well, the first one that comes to mind is Tanya.
Okay.
Mimi, you said something at the temple where you're like, my fortune said, oh, you will be married. And you said, oh, well, you might marry someone else. This topic keeps coming up.
This is a woman who calls me, we're supposed to be friends. And then now she's saying things like, oh, maybe you'll marry somebody else.
Girl, nobody cares that seriously, okay? So please don't think I'm questioning you about your marriage, because I don't give a f-
Tanya, I love, because Tanya, similar, this is going to go back to the Bethany comment to Barbara, but mm-hmm. Tanya came to play.
Yep.
I think that Tanya is just really fun. I like her fashions a lot. And I just think that Tanya, like, gelled with the group really nicely. And I remember leaving this season being like, I want more Tanya.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we can't talk about friend ofs without talking about Marlo.
Of course.
What we gonna do is leave my fashions alone.
What you gonna do is respect your elders, child, stand in the child's place.
Girl,
your child.
Girl, I got 2 kids and a husband. Right? What do you have?
Okay.
Talking about you an elder.
You got 2 kids by 2 different men.
Love Marlo. My one thing that stops me short of standing Marlo, it was the disloyalty to Nini.
Mm.
Because I just feel like if you're gonna come in as a friend of, like, imagine Faye turning on Kyle. It's just like, if you come in as a friend of, you gotta stay the course.
Yes.
So definitely don't love that. Probably my favorite friend of all time is Katie, currently on season 4 of Potomac.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
You said that Jacob said that Michael was gay.
So what?
That's not true.
Saying anything about you.
That's my husband.
What I said was that I had a different perspective on things just because of something that Jacob had said to me.
As somebody who recently rewatched season 1 of Potomac, I think that this Katie in season 4 contrasted with Katie from season 1 is particularly a lovely journey. But I love Katie. I love Katie. I think that she... it's just really important.
What do you think about her wig?
Which one?
The one that, you know.
The one
that made it to the Cayman Islands.
It's shifty, but I will always go back to Karen's wigs in season 3.
Fair.
So it's like, you know, the competition is tight.
Okay.
So those are 3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm cycling through. So wait, New York, Barbara wouldn't come on my list. I'm trying to think who else we...
Would you consider Harry Dubin a friend of?
Ooh, yeah.
Huh.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, he has enough centrality amongst many of the women. you know, Harry, to me, is like... he's just such an example of, like... These New York women are, like, grade A. And the idea that, like, so many of them, and these are beautiful women, and the idea that, like, three
what?
Have been with Harry.
We have Sonia, Ramona, Luann.
I think, and Aviva.
Oh, Aviva.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So the idea that 4 of these women, all very beautiful women in their own right, would subject themselves willingly to this man, it's like frustrating.
Yeah.
So yes, he's definitely a friend of, but also like he's never done anything endearing on the show. You know, I feel like to contrast him with like John, who had a rough go in the beginning, mm-hmm. but then you kind of like look at John now and it's like, because I went back recently and rewatched season 7 and it's like, especially his like toe-to-toe with Bethany, he was super unlikable. But now it's like, oh, John. Like, John's family.
Right. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, it's so true. It's
Harry's funny. Never become family. He's never endeared himself. He's just kind of stuck.
He's just there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There. So don't love Harry, but as a tangent, love John. I mean, support the friend ofs, and I extremely look forward to... I'm always excited when I see... the casting of a new friend of, because I think that friend ofs are great for us because they friend of is kind of like a public audition, and I think friend of is a great sort of like mechanism to sort of allow viewers a first taste and then the decision to sort of be like, okay, I want the full course.
Right. It's like every superhero needs their sidekick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the sidekick like becomes their own hero.
They become the master.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Evan, for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you. What a pleasure. Going down friend of memory lane.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long, not just Thursdays. You can find us on Twitter or Instagram at Bravo TV.
Don't forget to use the hashtag BravoDailyDish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack, E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out. You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
TTYL.
Bye.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy. Miss me, kiss.